welcome to episode 51 of the Derailed Podcast. I'm Chris.
And I'm Fred.
And Fred, we finally did it.
We played an 18XX face to face.
Yes, an actual 18XX. I say actual because online is like, you know, kind of actual.
It's virtual. It's not actual.
Yeah, man. If I can't hold it in my hand, is it real?
Yes. Yeah, no, it was fun. We played, well, maybe slight spoiler, but we played 18 mechs face to face.
Finally, yeah. So we finally get to talk about 18 mechs. It's been sitting on my shelf for an embarrassingly long time. I think I got it in like January or February or something. It came when Chesapeake came to this side. Mm. And it was like basically right before lockdown struck.
Before the world changed, yeah.
Yeah, and weren't sure if we could fit it in because of our curfew that we have here. So we've been able to meet face-to-face and stuff for quite a while. Currently in Johannesburg, at least, the virus isn't really too much of a thing, but we still have curfews in place. So we were just worried about cracking it in time for that. But we had one of our players couldn't come, so we had three of us. So we just thought, oh, screw it, let's give it a try.
Yeah.
And it worked out fine. We finished the game, and I think we finished at about 11:15, and our curfew's 12. So
yes, yeah. So not too pushed for time, but also not like plenty to spare. But we made it, yeah.
Yeah, pretty cool. Okay, but before we get to that, do we need some business to clean up?
Yes, we have a new patron, Michael Brandt, joined us. Thank you very much, Michael. We really appreciate the support.
Ooh. Could almost be a South African name.
It does sound like Brunt, yeah, but it's DT at the end. I'm not sure where Michael is from.
But you get Brunts with a DT at the end here, don't you, in SA?
I was trying to think. I don't think I know anyone, but it's not an unfamiliar surname.
Yeah. Maybe German.
Yeah, maybe German origin, yeah.
This is our game we play. Sorry, Michael, at your expense. I'm gonna go Germany.
Okay. How will we know?
He's in our Patreon. He's in our Discord. Yeah, we'll ask him. Michael, where are you from? And settle this for us. Yeah, man. Oh, we got an email as well.
Okay.
We got an email from Tim. Tim says, "Hi guys, I'm sure I'm too late, but my idea for the online tournament is to keep with the original theme of the podcast. I'd go with your plan to make it a decathlon, but increase the complexity of the game each round. So the first round would be a beginner game like Chessy, then two would be 89, and so on up the ladder."
That's a good idea. I like that.
Which does kind of fit the theme of the podcast, where we started out like little swanlings, just confused and not sure where our home was.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. We haven't actually started it yet. I don't know why, but the last 2 weeks have just been all over the place for me. So I've just been, I don't know, running around. Yeah, no, I'll try and start it now, soon. But we went with the poll, so I think we'll stick to the results of the poll for now. But we'll have another one at some point, and maybe that's a good idea for the next one.
Yeah, we could have a poll for each thing. So have like three beginner games, three intermediate games, and then three like complex games, and we can choose their favorite of each one.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, man. So yeah, thanks, Tim. I like the idea. We work well for like a 3-round tournament as well, I think.
Yeah.
Sweet. So should we talk about 18 mechs?
Yes, let's talk about 18 mechs.
How are you feeling about 18 mechs, Fred? I know you were disappointed. Do you want to tell everyone what happened?
I did want to do well. I did not do well. I did finish last. First and second between you and Simon was very close.
Very close.
Simon won, but yeah, and I think he played well as well to take the win.
Yeah, how much was it in the end? He pipped me by like $40 or something, I think. It was like a 2-digit number.
I think it was less than 100, yes.
Yeah, it was definitely, we did that thing where we count down our numbers from biggest to smallest, and we were both 4-4, and I think he was 4-4-4, and I was 4-4-1, something like that. It was very, very close.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was very close. Shall I jump into my thoughts on it? Would you want to?
Ooh, yeah. Well, should we set the stage a little bit for anyone who hasn't played 18 mechs, just to let you know kind of what it looks like? So maybe I'll just start there just to set the framework for anyone listening who isn't really sure how it goes. But so it's very similar to like sort of 1830 or 1889 in that it's one of those sort of full cap kind of games. But like 89, you float at 50%. It's got a bunch of companies, relatively small map, actually, not a very big map. The tiles aren't too constrained, so more 89 than 1830 in that regard. And the little wrinkle that it has is that it has mergers. So you have minor companies at the beginning that get auctioned alongside the private companies, and they give you shares in a national railroad later on. So at one particular point in the game, there's a time when the national railroad will merge, and what happens there is that if it has floated, if you basically, because there's a time where you can buy the shares before the kind of merger happens, you can choose to merge your own company into the National Railroad, which seems to be kind of not a great thing for your company, but it does get you off the hook for buying a train. So if you feel like your company is a little bit garbage, not really going anywhere, it's a good opportunity to have it get absorbed, to get some shares in a potentially much better company, but you do have to sell your shares off at half price. Which isn't obviously the best. And aside from that, there's just a train buying restriction, which is quite significant. So you can only buy one train at a time until you get to the four trains, and then everything can be bought. And that generally triggers quite a big train rush around that section.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I think those are the basics in terms of, yeah, the little niggles and what's kind of different. You think I'm missing anything there?
No, I think you pretty much covered it.
Yeah. So, Fred, what were your overall thoughts on 18 Banks?
Okay. So, this is the first one we've played with a national face-to-face. I think we might have played one or two games online with the national, but this is the first national we've played face-to-face. And
right.
Yeah, I did like it. So, a couple of interesting things in this game. So, like you said, as part of the private auction, you can buy some minor railway companies, and they just, like other miners we've seen, they just run routes and pay 50-50, 50 to you, 50% to their own treasury. They can't buy any other trains, though. They each just come with a two train. There were three of them. But then later, when the national forms, they get exchanged for two of them for a 5% cert and the other one for a 10% certificate in the national.
So the one for a 10% is in a different company.
Oh, that's in a different company.
The national one, yeah.
That's right. And the other two for 5% certs in the national. And those are also the only two 5% certs in the game. So that's also a little bit of an interesting niggle, is you have to deal with 5% certs in this game. But it wasn't. I don't think it was an issue. But it did raise an interesting, like, situation. So like you said, when the national forms, you can decide whether you want to merge into the national. But only one company can merge into the national. And so the national formation is triggered by, I think it was the first five train that's bought. Is that right?
I think so, yeah. If I remember correctly, yeah.
And then clockwise from the president that bought the first five train for their company, players can decide whether they want to merge one of their companies into the national or not. If, let's say, I'm next, which is what the case was in our game. In our game, Simon bought the first five train. I got to decide if I don't want to merge in, then you get the option. And then I think finally Simon would get the option if you didn't want to. So what happened in our game is Simon bought the first five train, and I had two companies that I think had a couple of twos and maybe one three train between the two of them or something like that. They were like low in trains and low in money, as my companies usually are.
Yes, yeah.
So I decided to merge just because it gets me away from a liability of two trains down to a liability of one train, because I was thinking I would probably have to pay some money out of pocket to buy the next train. But what I was trying to set up, which is, I think, an interesting situation that can occur, is so shares were sold and distributed between players already for the national before it actually forms. And what I was trying to do was with my extra cert that I get for merging. So when you merge, you also get a 10% certificate for merging into the national. Plus, like you said, you sell all the shares you own. Everyone sells all the shares they own of the company that merges in for half price, right?
Yeah, so you get a little 10% consolation prize.
Yeah, so you get 10%. So what I was trying to engineer was to pip out Simon in shareholdership with that extra 10% cert to make me the president of the National, but I wasn't able to pull it off. I think, so just before we all saw that the National would form, everyone started buying up the shares because we all wanted to be part of this new thing in 18XX that we haven't played with before. So all the shares were gone, actually. They were all in players' hands. And because of that 5% share, it's feasible for me to have like 35% and for Simon to have 40%. And then when I merge in, I have 45% and I become president. But yeah, I just couldn't pull that off. I couldn't get enough shares. But I think that's a really interesting situation that you have to look out for if the National is going to form.
I didn't really have I didn't have any big plans for the National. I think I just tried to buy up shares. So I think what was interesting in terms of how the National ended up playing out is that none of us really knew how it was going to work. So there's a point like halfway through the three trains where you can start buying shares in the National. And then when the five train happens, that's when the merge happens. And it only happens if the National's actually already been floated. Mm. So what was kind of interesting, though, was we all just rapidly bought up National shares because we played games with merge companies before, and generally they have quite powerful positions. So we all had pretty decent chunks. I think I had like 25% and Simon had maybe like 40%, and then you had...
I think I had 35.
Yeah, you were really close to being even with him. So we all just kind of figured, well, it's going to be good. We're all in this together. And where Simon, I think, essentially won the game was basically looting that company and abusing it as much as possible in order to benefit his company that he owned entirely on his own. He had 60% of it, which is the limit in this game. And on top of that, we had no shares in that company because it was kind of a failing company.
Yes.
And he just basically looted that National. So the National actually sucked, to be honest.
Mm.
Its share price ended up really, really low. It didn't pay many dividends. There were a couple of withholds. But because we were all sort of equally distributed in it, it sort of incentivized Simon to do that.
Yes.
So I guess that was our kind of failing.
Yes, and I think that was a really smart play of his. So we were all pretty much equal in shares in that company, and then he just looted it. He just took everything out of it he could to his other company and ran the National into the ground, basically.
Yeah, he really abused the National. And we were all very kumbaya about it. We were all like, oh, yeah, we're all going to buy. We're all going to benefit. Okay, Simon, do a great job. And he's like, cool, I'm going to withhold. Cool, I'll buy these trains. They're like, what are you doing? What are you doing? I want to have a meeting. It was government corruption at its absolute finest.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, he did that very well. That was, yeah, a very good play, I think.
Yeah, it's funny because a lot of parallels were made between Simon's company and our own South African state-owned enterprises.
Yes. Yeah.
In terms of bailouts, corruption, dodgy dealings.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a little bit too much of a thematic experience, I think.
Yeah, and the other thing I found interesting was, like you said, at the beginning, you can only buy one train, or each company can only buy one train per OR.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, they also have this mail contract. So if the company owns a train, they get the value of their home tile just at the beginning of each OR. So you're incentivized to buy that one train. And yeah, I think, like, to me, it felt like kind of like that kind of slows the beginning of the game down. But then once that limit goes away, then the train rush is in full force.
Yeah, because there's a way of, yeah, like you say, you can kind of be accumulating money. Mm. The mail contract is a good way of rescuing a company. And what I also found quite interesting about the mail contract is that it does allow you to siphon a lot more money out of the company. It's actually quite nice because what often happens when you're having to shuffle trains around, and what I find with full cap games or something like 1830, is that so often I'm stuck with the company with no shares in the bank pool, no way of generating money. It has some arbitrary amount of cash in there, like $20 or something, and I can't lay tokens I can't upgrade track or something. And it's so irritating. It's like I need $40 to build over this stupid mountain, and I can't, because I literally can't get $20 into here without making massive sacrifices. So it's quite forgiving in that sense. In it helps with that kind of stuff, with little track lays, tokens, stuff like that. You always end up getting money for that stuff.
Yes, I was thinking the exact same thing, actually, because I had to emergency buy a train for my one company. So, well, my only company that was left. So I'd had no money in there, but then I still was getting $20 or $30, so I could still lay track. And if the game had carried on a little bit longer, I would have been able to put down another token and things like that. So I actually really like that, that the company isn't on absolute zero money.
Yeah, it is quite a nice little thing. And I mean, this game is not necessarily soft, though, because I think the train rush is brutal. And our train rush wasn't too bad. We all managed to kind of survive it. But I have heard some pretty horrific stories about how bad the train rush can be in this game. We also played with the rule that four trains kind of soft rust, so they sort of go obsolete, so you get one more chance to run them. But there is an optional hard rusting rule for four trains, and I think that is particularly brutal.
Okay, right. Yeah, I didn't realize that was an optional rule.
So one of the reasons, yeah, the train rush is so harsh is that the first six train that gets bought rusts all the three trains. The second six train that gets bought rusts all the four trains.
Mm.
So it's literally like back to back like that. It's not like you have to go into diesels or something to rust the four trains. It's just boom, boom. So you can rust two massive groups of non-permanent trains in one very quick OR. Yeah.
The other thing that was cool is you get the 4D trains at the end, which double the cities.
Yes.
Also, towns don't count against your stops for the train. So a 4D doesn't double the towns, but you can still like hit a couple of towns and then four cities and get a decent payout. So my remaining company had a 4D train at the end, and it was doing well with that train. It was actually running very big routes at the end of the game.
Yeah, the 4Ds are actually really, really good, because there's a couple of big value cities, and doubling up those generally gets you very, very high revenue.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, and some big offports as well, actually. So if you hit one of those and like you're another big city twice, or something, that's, yeah. I mean, with two trains, that would be. But yeah, that's very profitable routes.
And I think it makes sense for that map. It's quite a tight map. There's a lot of opportunities to get tokened out in that map. So it makes sense that the diesel is kind of that 4D instead of just like run as long as you like, which might not actually be very long a lot of the time.
Right, yes, yeah.
So what was interesting is that where all the miners start is this weird little tile that has basically a city spot and then like a little town on the same tile. So you can run from one to the other on the same tile, essentially.
Mm.
Because the company actually starts with nothing in its treasury. So unlike other games we played where the miners have a treasury, this one starts with nothing. And you're forced to basically just run that little tile over and over again until you can start to expand outside of it.
Right, yes. Yeah, that was very cool as well.
What's interesting about those tiles, though, is that all of them upgrade into single-spot tiles. They don't upgrade into opening up more. So when you get tokens down there, I found that those were quite significant choke points. Like, Simon tokened up around there, and then on the west, kind of the west coast, I guess it was. And that was quite brutal for me, because I couldn't get up that west side at all, and I found myself getting kind of shoved in quite a lot.
Right, yeah.
I almost got trapped in the center of the board. So tokening is definitely quite a big deal in that game as well.
Yes, yeah, the map is quite tight. It's, like you said, it is a fairly small map, which I like.
Yeah, so it's quite cool because it's got some sort of relaxed elements and some more mean kind of or difficult to manage elements, but kind of in different ways than what I've seen in other games. So it's 1830, it's all about sort of the tile restrictions and things like that, whereas in this game, it's much more just around getting tokened out or dealing with these merge companies or dealing with other players kind of messing with your stuff.
Right, yeah.
So I found it quite interesting in that it's got this sort of brutal train rush and it's got this tight map with lots of token spots and single city upgrades. But at the same time, you've got plenty of tiles, you've got the mail contract, you've got all this stuff. So it feels like it gives and it takes away in equal measure. So it was cool. It was a different kind of challenge.
Yes. Yeah. No, I must say, I thoroughly enjoyed it. You'd definitely like to play it again soon.
And I think we both felt like it was kind of a good step up game.
Mm.
it's a good step up from an 1889 or an 1830. It's not a lot of extra complexity at all. I could even see, to be honest, teaching this to someone for their first 18xx. It wouldn't be that much of a leap. The stuff isn't too difficult to manage. So yeah, in terms of kind of complexity, it just adds nice little sprinkling of extra stuff over the typical full cap kind of game that you would be used to.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I think it's the only one in our physical collection with the National at the moment, so definitely want to play that again to explore that side of it a bit more as well.
Yeah, a different kind of merger from what we're used to.
Yes.
We've played Cologne and stuff like that, where the merger is kind of all about all these companies coming together and exchanging shares, and it's sort of this thing that just happens at a particular time.
Yes.
Whereas in this game, the merger may not happen at all. Mm. First of all, it doesn't have to happen, which is interesting. And on top of that, it's kind of this weird like thing where it just absorbs one entire company. So how it works is, if everyone declines to willingly give up their company, the president of the company chooses one of the companies that hasn't been floated yet and basically just removes it from the game.
Right, yeah.
So just sort of black hole swallows one of the companies in the game. Because if it's your company, you can't refloat it, right? It's, everything gets removed. You sell all your shares and stuff, but then it's done. The company can't be relaunched later on.
Yes, yeah, no, it's out of the game. If it is a merger, though, National also gets the tokens and the assets of the merged in company, though. So in our case, that was just some money and tokens, but those tokens were quite valuable.
Yeah, and that they often are, because it essentially gives you multiple jumping off points.
Right, yeah. The other interesting thing about this game is the New Mexico tile upgrade. So it's like this double tile, which we haven't seen in an 18xx before. I'm sure they probably exist, but it was the first time we played an 18xx with this. And that was really cool as well, because one of the upgrades you could actually... So the double tile, it's like just two adjoined tiles, but in one of the upgrades, you could kind of choose which way you want to go. So there was a higher value tile with fewer city token spots, and then there was a lower value tile with more city token spots. And because anyone can upgrade the tile, it's not necessarily the owner or the national that runs from New Mexico that gets to upgrade that tile. Someone else could upgrade that tile and choose the lower value, but give themselves a token spot so they could put a token down in there, which is also quite interesting.
Yeah, that was cool, because we found both in the box and we're like, oh, okay, I guess you get to choose.
Yes, yeah.
I wasn't even kind of aware of it, because I kind of skimmed the rules and just looked for the major differences and stuff. So yeah, we were kind of in a hurry to play. But yeah, that was quite funny, because like you say, there's one with higher value but only three spots, and one with low value but four spots.
Yeah, that's very cool little addition as well, I think.
But it's an interesting thing to know about as well, because like you say, you can sort of upgrade to the three tile, token it, and potentially shut someone out.
Right, yes, absolutely, yeah.
So that's when it becomes really, really important to be the first one to do it. That one can potentially... You see, there's these little sharp edges in the game.
Hmm.
And I think bankruptcy is definitely on the cards when the train rush kicks in.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I can see that train rush being much more brutal than ours was, for sure. Yeah.
Oh, the other thing that's quite cool is, similar to 1846, you get to place two yellow tiles.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I wanted to mention that. You can't, like 1846, upgrade as well. You can't place one upgrade one, but you can place two yellow, which also, that kind of, I don't know, that's an interesting kind of balance with the slow trains at the beginning is this fast track development.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the flow of the game, right? Like, you fill up the whole map, you slowly get some trains, and then suddenly, boom, everything explodes. The merger happens, the train rush happens, the map is totally developed. Suddenly, everyone has a bunch of money, a bunch of expensive trains. There's a merger company that potentially has access to more tokens. And now the game is afoot.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, very cool. And I think it'll, as it happened in our game, I think it will often happen where the national launching and the train rush coincide, because all of a sudden there's this national company with lots of money to buy trains.
Yeah, which is actually kind of cool. So I like I think that's kind of the general flow to it, which seems quite interesting, is that in the beginning, you sort of all are laying out this track and you're floating one or two companies and you're kind of saying, okay, I'm going to go this way. I'm going to go that way. I'm going to kind of take this area over here. I know I was doing that with my minor company as well. I was sort of building it towards my other company and all that kind of stuff. So you've got all this like big tile laying that happens early, but no one's making huge moves, and you've got the mail contract. So no one's like significantly draining their treasury either, because you can only buy one train. And so you can take it kind of slow, but then you are going to hit that point where suddenly there's access to trains that don't suck.
Right. Yeah.
And you've got a bunch of money, and now you can start refloating things because it's full cap. So there's huge influxes of capital that happen. Yeah. So I think all your early plans, that's where the big contest kind of happens as well.
Yeah.
And I think people start tokening a lot there as well, and things like that. So yeah, it's kind of cool. There's an interesting flow to it where you say, like, there's this calm beginning where you're just playing very politely and laying down a bunch of stuff and you're building this whole network. And then suddenly, yeah, big explosion, lots of money, lots of trains,
yes,
lots of tokens. And now you've got to really compete for your space. And I actually felt that in our game as well. I felt like in the beginning, everything was quite polite and quite nice. And then suddenly, I felt like I was getting tokened out of everywhere. And Simon was looting the crap out of the National and people were withholding. And I was like,
yeah,
the train rush is happening. Everything was about to rust. I was trying to shuffle money around. So yeah, it does start out very nice and casual, and then it does become very tense.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I know. It's very cool. I enjoyed that.
And then it's over, which is kind of cool as well.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, it didn't actually last that long after our National launched.
No, so what's interesting is it's got another one of these things where if someone hits the end of the stock market, that also triggers the end.
Right, yeah.
And the stock market is quite deep. There's quite a lot of spots to fall down, but it's not very long to the right. So if you keep trudging along to the right, you will most likely, someone will get there.
Yes.
We got there before we broke the bank. I don't know if that's common or not, but yeah, it kind of places a kind of a predictable end to the whole thing. So you can see a few rounds back, all right, that person's going to pay four times or three times and get there. And it's not really worth me trying to mess with their stock to stop it. I just need to maximize my own profits in the meantime.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what my like general strategy was. Not much really. I had two of the miners, I think. I liked the miners. I felt like they did well for me.
Yes. I had one of the miners and it was the first one and it wasn't great because I think it was, if I remember correctly, it was the only one that had to lay a tile before it could run routes. I think the others had tiles printed on there already. I'm not sure I'm remembering that correctly, but I remember it like after seeing it play out and looking at the map more closely. The first one is definitely, I think, the weaker of the three.
I remember you taking longer to be able to lay like a second tile to be able to get outside of your starting zone.
Right. Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that second tile was expensive or something. I can't remember exactly, but you were definitely developing yours quicker than I was able to develop mine.
Yes, yeah, I remember that. I do remember that as well. Yeah, so that was kind of interesting. Yeah, so I'm trying to think I don't think I did anything super interesting. I played kind of a normal game, just kind of feeling it out. So I had the miners. I think my main mistake really was just buying up too much into the National.
Yes.
My companies performed fairly well. I did the kind of the standard thing where I wanted to sell down, but I wasn't able to sell down as much as I wanted to because Simon sold before I could unceremoniously dump my company on him.
Right.
As part of my big sell down. So he kind of filled up the market a little bit. So I ended up hanging on to a company because I realized I kind of had enough money to float another one even without selling that one down too much. Yeah, I managed to get permanent trains sorted and all of that without too much hassle. I had to do a little bit of an emergency buy, but it wasn't terrible. So I had kind of the normal, regular kind of flow. And from there, it was just sort of trying to buy up the right stocks and that. But there was definitely some tension in getting permanents because I had three companies, I believe, and I was trying to get permanents into all of them. So that was a little bit stressful at one point.
Yes.
But yeah, I think my biggest mistake really was being invested in that National Railroad for too long.
Yeah, if I'd been able to buy one more share, I think I might have been able to take over presidency when the merge happened. So
right,
you cost me the game as well with that mistake of yours.
Yeah, man. I was just like, I don't want to get left behind. I'm just going to buy this up.
No, it's we were all wrapped up in the enthusiasm, being enthusiastic about the National.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think Simon sold us a house of lies when he said, like, don't worry, guys.
Yeah.
It's going to make it. Oh, man. Fell for it again.
Yeah, no, but it was fun play. I really enjoyed it.
It was. It was really, really cool. I liked it a lot as well.
Yeah.
Definitely will play again. And it's one of those nice ones that you just feel like you kind of can play again, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. It's nice and easy to play. You can bust it on a weeknight. So it's not too long, it feels like. It's not one of the longer ones.
No.
I don't think that we've played.
And I think Simon enjoyed it as well. Because he doesn't enjoy all of them, and I think Rudy will like it as well. He also, like, I know Rudy doesn't like 62 that much and things, but I think this one doesn't add that much on top to make it difficult, rules-wise.
Yeah, I think Rudy will like this one as well, because it's kind of a more pure experience. Like, he really likes 1889, for example.
Mm.
This is kind of a lot like 89, actually. Smaller map, 50% float.
Right.
Not too much tile scarcity. So it's kind of like 89 in that way, but then it just adds all this little extra stuff on top of it. But it's not overwhelming and it's not overwrought or full mad scientist mode like 62 is.
Yeah, and Simon likes it because towns don't punish you.
Yeah, that's true. Simon hates towns for whatever reason. So he likes that you could just breeze through them.
Yes, without stopping.
Sweet, man. Yeah, I don't know. Is there anything else we want to say about mechs? I think that's a good first impressions.
Yeah, no, I think that's pretty much everything I wanted to say about it.
Just maybe to add, we had the all aboard kind of mass-produced version of it, which is really, really nice. So that's one of the ones. All Aboard Games is doing... I think they're mass-producing all their games. I don't think they're doing any handmade stuff anymore. So this one was when Chesapeake originally got funded. They picked a couple of other games and they said, you know what, we're going to send these along. We're going to send these files along to China as well and get them sort of mass printed in the same way that we're treating Chesapeake. So it's sort of like half cards for the shares, but they're nice. They've got like a linen finish and the tiles came out of punch board, but I found them to be not too thick. Like 40 GMTs are a little bit too thick, potentially. These ones seemed a little bit thinner than that and a little bit nicer. Yeah, nice cardstock, nice everything, and a very non-18XX-y looking box cover, so, but in a good way. So
Yeah, very good quality and everything, for sure, yeah.
Nice. So, yeah, I can definitely recommend that one and recommend the game in general.
Yeah, definitely, for sure.
All righty, Fred, are you ready for your stunning South African fact?
Yes, give it to me.
Now, tell me if you knew this.
Okay.
I feel like you didn't. All right, are you ready?
Okay.
A famous South African invention. I hope this is famous elsewhere in the world. But did you know South Africa invented the creepy crawly?
Wow, I think I knew that. And I also think not everyone will know what a creepy crawly is.
It's a swimming pool vacuum cleaner.
Yes, that's a good description.
Doesn't everyone have these, though? Don't they have them?
I don't know.
Americans with your pools, you guys have pools. Do you have vacuum cleaners in your pools? Do you call them vacuum cleaners when they're in a pool? What do you guys call them?
Do you call them creepy crawlies?
Or do you call it black magic? Like, you've never heard of this thing. So, okay, I don't know if everyone has these now, and that's going to be kind of funny if they don't, but every pool in freaking South Africa has one of these things where it's just, you plug it into the filter and it goes joomp, joomp, joomp along the bottom of your pool.
Mm.
It just goes around automatically. It's like a really crappy Roomba, and it just
it's not
sucks
wireless.
Up all the leaves, sucks up all the leaves and stuff. And then when we were kids, we were like scared of them, and we used to ask the adults to take them out of the pool.
Yeah, it's actually a really clever invention because it just like cleans up dirt and whatever settles at the bottom of the pool. It just goes around pretty much all day and just does its thing.
Yeah, so it just uses the water pressure from the filter. It doesn't actually use any electricity or anything, but it looks electric. It goes...
Yeah.
You know, it moves around.
Yes.
So that was invented by hydraulic engineer Ferdinand Xavier.
Oh, okay. When do you know?
In 1974.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was a kid not long after that, and we had them from as long as I can remember. Whenever we had a pool, we had one, yeah.
Yeah, man. So, what do you guys call them? Creepy Crawly is a brand name, but we all call them that. So, kind of like how I think Brits always refer to like vacuum cleaners as Hoovers or whatever, even though that's just like a brand name, you know?
Yes, yeah.
It's the same, yeah. We all just call them Creepy Crawlies, even though I believe that's just a brand name.
It is just a brand name. And there are a handful of other brands as well, but yeah, they're just all Creepy Crawlies.
So now we need feedback, guys. Have you ever heard of this thing? Or is it like everyone has it, Chris? It's not like a weird South African thing. But in that case, what do you guys call them?
I feel the name is South African.
Yeah, what do you call them, guys? All right, so that's my South Africa fact for you.
Yeah, cool one.
Done.
Nice.
Very compact episode, Fred. Nicely done. Good economy.
Yeah, for sure.
Sweet, guys. Well, I guess that's all.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
See you next week.
Cheers.
Bye.
If you would like to get in touch with us, we are at derailed18xx on Instagram and Twitter. You can email us, derailed18xx@gmail.com, and we're on Patreon at patreon.com/derailed18xx. Thanks for listening.